It's time now for our Africa update. The search begins for an African Einstein. In South Africa this week, at least 24 people have been killed in a wave of attacks on foreigners. And we look at Rwanda's new economic force, women. For more, we've got Roxanne Lawson. She's Director of Africa Policy for TransAfrica Forum. Hey, Roxanne.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. So let's talk about some disturbing news from South Africa. It's the biggest economic power on the continent, and plenty of immigrants from other African nations are flooding into the country, legally or not. South Africans are accusing these immigrants of taking away jobs and causing crime. In some ways, it's similar to a lot of the debates right here in the U.S. Now, some South Africans are getting into brutal attacks on foreigners. At least 24 people have been killed in unrest that broke out a week ago. So what's the latest on the violence?
You're directly right that it actually is very much like what we see here in the United States with our migration issues. As of this morning, official reports that 217 people have been arrested, over 3,000 have been displaced, and 22 people are dead.
Now, reports say a majority of the victims are Zimbabwean. I actually was in South Africa about 15 months ago, and I saw what some people call Little Zimbabwe, an area where many of the people who are leaving for economic and political reasons have settled. So how were they being targeted, and what do you think the South Africans who are engaging in this want? Do they want to drive people out? What do they want?
Well, there's been a history in independent South Africa of immigration problems and tension. Right now in South Africa, there's a 40% unemployment rate, a huge shortage of housing, both public and private housing, as well as a global food crisis that's impacting poor South Africans disproportionately. And so I think for all of those reasons, we see, as all over the globe, a rise in xenophobia. For people who are, you know, migrants in Southern Africa from Zimbabwe, I think that people in South Africa are very concerned that the unresolved electoral issues in Zimbabwe, frankly, that Zimbabwe doesn't have an elected government in power right now, will create an even greater rise in Zimbabweans flooding across the border. Right now, it's estimated that about 3 million Zimbabweans live both documented and undocumented in South Africa, and that number will rise.
Well, what are South Africa's policies on both immigration and people who are of refugee status?
South Africa has some very liberal policies, as it has a very liberal constitution on migration and immigration. I think with that, though, is a history since 1994 of xenophobia and of a backlash against that very liberal migration policy. We saw in 1994 the Inkatha Freedom Party actually really try to take physical action or threaten to take physical action if the government failed to crack down on undocumented workers in South Africa. We saw similarly later on in that decade a study that was done by the Human Sciences Research Council and the Institute for Security Studies in South Africa that reported that 65% of South Africans were in support of forced repatriation of undocumented migrants in their country. And so I think that history of violence against not just Zimbabweans, but Somalis, Mozambicans, and Angolans has just played itself out in larger and larger ways here in the last couple of weeks. And that Zimbabwe has been, I mean, that Zimbabwe and South Africa, both governments have been trying to respond to this recent wave of migration, but their responses have not been enough.
All right, I want to move on to an interesting initiative. Physicist Stephen Hawking is looking for Africa's Einstein. What he wants to do with a bunch of entrepreneurs and scientists is to create Africa's postgraduate centers for advanced math and physics, places that don't exist yet. And it's planned to cost 75 million British pounds or over 150 million U.S. dollars. Hawking said, quote, "The world of science needs Africa's brilliant talents." So what exactly is this plan going to do?
This plan is actually quite interesting. It is not just the brainchild of Mr. Hawking, but also of a South African, Neil Torek. And it is set up to actually try to create institutions of higher learning focusing on math and sciences on the African continent, which will hope to draw Africans from all over the continent to study on the continent and to further advance the great history that Africa has had actually in influencing and changing Western science and math.
Now, when you think about Africa, there's been a huge brain drain, as there's been for many other nations around the world. India is one of them, where you create people who go out and get degrees in math and science, computers, medicine, etc., and then they go other places. Do you think that even if this plan works, that people won't stay in African countries?
I think that if this plan works, people may, professionals may stay in African nations. I mean, there's so much that's involved in why highly trained professionals migrate out of the African continent. And part of that is the way in which international aid and development are both enacted on the continent and the demand that we create for those highly trained individuals from Africa and the U.S. But I think that more importantly than that, I think it will help, I hope, for the United States, for Africans, for the entire world to actually really understand the great contributions in history that Africa has made to math and sciences over the last 4,000 years. I think that's really not understood in a real way. And so,
well, give me an example.
Oh, I can give you several. I mean,
just start with one.
We know that the first medical texts in the world actually originated from parts of the continent. There also, in 1978, two U.S. American scientists, Smith and Avery, discovered, quote unquote, that the first smelting of steel in the world was done in Tanzania about 15 to 2,000 years ago, and that the machine used a semiconductive technology, one that actually for the rest of the Western world wasn't invented, quote unquote, until the 1970s. And so we see that. For example, we also have an example. I'm sorry, you only asked for one, but I can't help myself. From the Dogon, people who live in West Africa, their ability to both their contributions and ability to astronomy worldwide have been highly documented, but that we in the West know very little about those contributions.
All right. Well, let's finally move on to Rwanda. Last month was the 14th anniversary of the genocide, where 800,000 Rwandans were killed. We've seen depictions of that genocide in movies like Hotel Rwanda, but in the past 14 years, the country has rebuilt economically and in terms of relations between people of different ethnic groups. Women have helped push that change. So, Roxanne, what kind of roles are Rwandan women playing?
Rwandan women are really a force to be reckoned with. We saw that in 2003, 48.8% of the seats in Rwanda's lower house of parliament were taken over by women. That's the highest rate in the world. And that's really literally 40 years after Rwandan women were given the right to vote and independence. We've also seen that there's been a rise in women entrepreneurship for a couple of different reasons. First, that fertile lands that were left barren because of the slaughter of husbands, fathers, and brothers were taken up by women, wives, and daughters, and we were able to make those lands viable. We've also seen by international financial institutions and investors a real desire and need to invest in women as entrepreneurs in Rwanda. And so we've seen a 50% increase in women who can read and write in Rwanda since the genocide, as well as 71% of them have bettered their economic situation, both through their own personal entrepreneurship because they're market women or farmers and in diverse things as in coffee and bean exports. And so that's actually really been quite wonderful and one of the unknown or unwritten aspects of the outcome of genocide has been that there's been a place that's opened up for women in Rwanda to really take the lead in that country.
And just quickly, are these women doing, you know, independent projects or working together to form larger businesses or both?
They're doing both. I mean, there are a couple of really well-known co-ops in Rwanda of women who've come together to do both large and small-scale farming. There are also individual women entrepreneurs who are changing the face of media, of technology in Rwanda, as well as lots of women who've become PMs and are on all levels of government taking leadership. And they've been able to, through all of these things, really change both national GDP investment and also personal investment into families, into home renovation, improvement in nutrition, etc.
Well, Roxanne, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure as always.
Roxanne Lawson is Director of Africa Policy for Trans-Africa Forum, and she was at our headquarters in Washington, D.C.